I'm Melissa Harris-Perry, and this is The Takeaway. According to a report by Global Witness, which is an environment and human rights watchdog, 2020 was the deadliest year on record for environmental and land defenders around the world. On average, more than 4 people a week were killed as a result of their work. And these numbers almost certainly underestimate the true scope of the violence. Much of the brutality occurred in Central and South America, and more than one-third of the victims are indigenous persons. Now, indigenous peoples and communities around the world are fighting to protect the land and natural resources where they live. But their efforts often result in intimidation, threats, and violence. The Takeaway heard from the leader of the Shuar Adutum people, located in the Condor Mountain Range of the Ecuadorian Amazon.
Yo soy la presidenta del pueblo Shuar Adutum. Me llamo Josefina Tunqui. Represento a 47 centros a 6 comunidades que están ubicadas en 4 cantones.
That was Josefina Tunqui, president of the Shuar Adutum people. Now, their territory spans nearly 900 square miles with approximately 12,000 residents. Nearly 60% of her tribe's territory has been concessioned to large-scale mining and extraction companies without their consultation or consent. Solaris Resources, a Canadian company that mines copper and gold in the Americas, is one of those companies trying to take resources from Shuar Adutum's territories. And President Tunqui has tried to communicate with the company directly. She's filed complaints on the national and international level, and she's also filed a complaint with the UN's International Labor Organization. Because of this, she alleges that she's received a threatening phone call from Vice President of Operations at Solaris Resources, Federico Velasquez.
Josefina, Presidenta, las denuncias que ustedes hacen, las demandas internacionales, todo a través de medios de comunicación, está haciendo quedar mal a mi empresa, y la cual en la próxima, si escucho las mismas pronunciamientos, manifestaciones, denuncias, voy a tener que degollar una cabeza de ellas.
So there, President Tunqui is saying that in 2020, she received this call from Federico Velasquez saying that all of her complaints are making the company look bad, and that if it continues, he will cut the heads off of someone in her community. Now, in a response to The Takeaway, Federico Velasquez denies that he made the threat, and you can see his full response on thetakeaway.org. Still, the Solaris Resources mine is doubling down on their extraction operations, and the Shuar Adutum people are still fighting to protect their territory, the environment, and their culture. Here's another indigenous leader of the Cacataibo people in central Peruvian Amazon.
Mi nombre es Erling Odis Estrella, presidente de la Federación Nativa de Comunidades Cacataibo, FENACOCA, de la región Ucayali y región Huánuco, que pertenece al pueblo Cacataibo en las provincias de Padre Abad y Puerto Inca.
That is Erling Odisio, president of the Native Federation of Cacataibo Communities. His fellow community leaders are being threatened and killed by narco-traffickers as they invade the rainforest, cut down trees, and set up cocoa agriculture and production within their ancestral territories. And the past 2 years of COVID has also hit their community hard.
Entonces, por narcotráfico ha sido asesinado los últimos 2 años, 4 de mis hermanos y 8, ¿no? Con el virus, ¿no? Entonces, esto ha sido el golpe más duro de nuestro pueblo.
He's telling us how drug traffickers have killed 4 of his fellow community leaders in the last 2 years, and that COVID has killed 8 members in his community. So to learn more about these issues, I spoke with Andrew Miller, an advocacy director for Amazon Watch, a nonprofit that fights to protect the rainforest and advance the rights of indigenous peoples in the Amazon basin.
There are many different contexts, of course. There are a lot of kind of economic drivers of deforestation, of environmental destruction. There are different industries. The agriculture, you know, kind of big agriculture is one industry, mining, oil and gas, and other infrastructures. Those are kind of like the licit side of it, the kind of quote unquote legal side of it. Of course, you also have a whole series of illicit actors, as I mentioned, illegal logging, illegal mining, drug production. Actually, that's a big thing that we're seeing in our work in the Peruvian Amazon right now, where indigenous territories are being invaded by essentially land grabbers who are converting their territories into areas to produce coca and cocaine. So it's many different actors, but in many cases, they're very strong economic incentives, and that's playing itself out at a local and national level, but there's kind of this question of the broader economic system and the markets to which these products are going. And, you know, certainly when we look at agricultural products, when we look at beef, when we look at soy, when we look at the minerals that are being produced, I mean, a lot of those are, of course, being consumed in the United States, in North America, in Europe, and other economies, of course. I mean, the rise of China, there are a tremendous amount of commodities that are being sent to China also. So there is a broader global responsibility, but it is important for us here in the United States to think about our own consumption. You know, the New York Times just did a piece about leather in luxury cars and how that leather is coming from, a certain amount of it is coming from the Brazilian Amazon, and many of those cows are coming from areas that were illegally deforested. So we can see those kinds of chains, and not just the companies that are producing and selling those products, but we also need to look at the broader role of investors and banks. You know, where are those funds going and what kinds of activities are they, you know, profiting from? And so that's another part of the work that I think is very important, that we look at the investors, and it's important that we as individuals are looking at where our money is invested and what's our responsibility in what's happening. So we can't just blame the Brazilian government or the Peruvian government or whoever on the ground. We also need to look at our own culpability in these dynamics that are resulting in the deaths of really brave people at a local level.
You wrote about Colombia and Colombia being among the deadliest place for environmentalists. Can you talk about what's happening in Colombia, but also with an eye, as you point out, towards the ways that this global supply chain that we may all be a part of, right, the not only supply, but demand chain might be impacting this violence?
Right. So we worked with another organization that's based in Colombia called the Interfaith Rainforest Initiative to write a piece about what's happening there currently. Unfortunately, Colombia is a country that has had violent conflict happening for decades, and there are many different causes of that. They are in sort of a quote unquote peace process, and there was a lot of hope and expectation about that. But unfortunately, the actual implementation of the peace accords in Colombia has been very spotty in many ways. And we work to highlight that in this piece, and the fact that, unfortunately, there are a number of indicators about deforestation and other environmental problems that are on the rise in Colombia. And of course, the human corollary to that are the sort of frightening number of killings of folks, of activists, of people standing up for their communities. In the last 2 years, according to Global Witness, you had the highest number of killings that happened in Colombia. And that means that they sort of beat out the Philippines and Honduras and Brazil and other countries that have long histories of, you know, being very deadly countries for local activists. We believe that the application of the political will, you know, that governments really need to make a commitment, and not just in rhetoric, but in practice, to protecting human rights, to protecting the environment. You know, they really need to go after the root causes. There are often actions that are taken to sort of demonstrate that they're doing things, but they're not really necessarily getting to the root causes. And so, for example, in Colombia, they launched a whole operation this year to go after deforestation in national parks. But really what they did was mostly arrest kind of the low-level people who were just trying to subsist at a local level. And they didn't necessarily go after companies or the economic interests or the investors or the higher level kind of economic and political interests that are really behind the deforestation and what's happening. So, you know, we made recommendations to the current president of Colombia, Iván Duque, who's very much sort of presenting himself. He was at the UN General Assembly in September. He was at the climate summit in Glasgow, presenting himself as an environmental champion. And our op-ed was saying, look, there needs to be a real implementation of the peace accord. There needs to be a ratification and an implementation of the Escazú agreement, which is a regional environmental agreement that Latin American countries are signing on to, but that has a strong component related to protection of local defenders. But we also make recommendations to the Biden administration. And there's been a lot of discussion in the Biden administration about protection of the environment and climate. They launched a strategy at the climate summit for protecting tropical forests. And one of our key messages is that any strategy for climate really must center the protection of these local activists, because they are the front lines. They are the last line of defense often. And there are many things that the US government can and should be doing, and other governments can and should be doing, to support those local activists.
Andrew Miller is an advocacy director for Amazon Watch. Thank you for joining us today.
It was my pleasure.